is for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterdon Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home Sweet Home.
Good morning. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. And the weather this week looks high of 40 today and cloudy, then chance of light rain. Rain tonight and Thursday, we've got heavy rain and a high of 52. Thursday night, showers, then partly cloudy, low of 26. The sun comes back out again on Friday. We have mostly sunny with a high of 33. And then mostly sunny again on Saturday. So it's looking like a good weekend.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith, and you're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, and we are also on Facebook Live today. You can look us up on Facebook. The page is called Happy to Help or at Happy Hunterdon. And today I'm very excited to welcome Brian Saber, who is the president of Asking Matters. Welcome, Brian.
Great to be here. Thank you, Nicole.
I'm so excited because I love philanthropy, I love volunteerism, and I love fundraising, which is the most challenging part, I think, anybody in any kind of nonprofit knows very well. And you have done it for your entire career, and you're an expert. So can you give us a background about how you got into this profession and maybe share some secrets along the way today?
Sure. So I think, like most people, I did not grow up saying, I want to be a fundraiser when I grow up. I ask that question every time I train, actually. I say, did anyone in this room grow up saying that? And once in a while, and once in a blue moon, truly, someone raises a hand, and it turns out their parent or parents had been in the business, and they caught the bug. And I joke all the time because, as we discuss now, we have teenagers. I have a 17-year-old son who I reference in the book, and he has not caught that bug. And I think very few people do when they're young, even though lots of kids do fundraising for their special events, their clubs, and so forth. So as with most people, I went off to college, and I had a work-study job, and I got involved in student activities, and I loved the environment. I loved the idea that I was part of a group that had a greater mission. We weren't just thinking of ourselves. We were trying to make our community a better place. And quite frankly, I decided I wanted to be in the nonprofit world. I didn't say I wanted to be a fundraiser. I just knew I wanted to do something that would make an impact. And I loved the performing arts in particular. So when I graduated college, I started working in the performing arts. I also was getting a graduate degree, but I went to a performing arts center and then a theater. And what happened was in those first jobs, someone said, gee, can you help with a grant proposal? Gee, will you help with a special event? And it turned out I was good at dealing with donors and making them feel good and showing them around or whatever it was. And so the next thing I knew, I was a fundraiser, and here I am 35 years later, basically, and I've been fundraising my whole career.
Good for you. That's incredible. Well, and I think a lot of people that work in nonprofits or volunteerism know that it, you kind of have to start out as, or often be a jack of all trades, right? You know, because it's, you don't have everybody to fill every role. So it was nice you got, you got that thrown at you and found out you were great at it and kind of excelled at it, right?
Yes. So especially since most nonprofits are small, mm-hmm. as you said, everyone's doing everything. I became the executive director of a teeny performing arts company where I was it. I mean, the fundraising was either going to happen because I did it or it wasn't going to happen at all, which is really like a baptism by fire. And you learn it all. And I think that's how most of us come to it and do it. As a matter of fact, so many of us don't get much training except on the job. Right, mm-hmm. we don't. Some people go to a school for philanthropy or for nonprofit management and so forth, and learn all the basics there. But most of us learn it on the job and over time.
So, what can you give us a nugget? Like, what is the secret to good fundraising? I think, well, you talk about it in the book, which we can talk about, but part of it is to be authentic, right?
Yes.
Would that be number one, or what else can you tell us?
It would be. So, well, there were many types of fundraising, right? There's direct mail, there's now crowdfunding, you've got institutional funding and so forth. And I focus and have always focused on the person-to-person fundraising, which includes institutional, because if you're going to a foundation and trying to get funding, you're developing a relationship with the giving officer, mm-hmm. right? Because at the end of the day, people give to people. So I have done special events and all the other fundraising, but my focus over the years has been developing relationships, cultivating people, and asking for significant gifts in person. And in all that fundraising, authenticity is number one. You're right. And I think most people don't realize that. They think I'm supposed to be something in particular, and I'm supposed to say something that my donor wants to hear. And I always say, the only thing we know your donor wants to hear is your passion and your authenticity. If you can be passionate and authentic, whatever you say will be compelling to the donor. And the donor will ask you questions to find out more, and you'll ask the donor questions to learn more. But you always start with who you are, because you're trying to build a relationship, and who wants to have a relationship with someone who's selling you, who seems phony, who's mm-hmm. inauthentic.
Right. And yeah, like you said, people sell to people, or people work with people, right? So it's a personal relationship, and it's a conversation, which is what I talk about on the show. I always tell my guests when they come, I said, it's just a conversation.
Right.
No worries. Just be yourself, and we'll get out all of the good stuff out that you have to share. And that's what I try to tell people on the show too, is to that I emphasize volunteerism, because when you find the volunteer opportunity that's right for you, you'll figure out it's a good fit, and your life just explodes with creativity and relationships and fun. So sometimes you have to kind of feel your way, right? You know, you weren't a gung-ho fundraiser from the get-go, right? You have to learn, and just by walking the walk, right?
You do. But I will say this, to be very honest. Even today, I mean, if I had to choose one thing to do, it wouldn't be fundraising. It wouldn't, and I don't think it is for most of us. We do it because we care and we want to make a difference, and we have found that this is the way we can do it. Mm-hmm. So I know that I can make the biggest impact by fundraising because I'm good at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right?
And that's why I do it. I think that's why most of us do it. That's the role we found we can play, just like volunteers find their role they can play. Some are hands-on volunteers, some are fundraisers, some mm-hmm. sit on boards and have fiduciary responsibility. Figure out how you can make the biggest impact.
Right, and the one thing you mentioned in your book was you said that most people sitting on a board, it's their first time on a board. Is that true?
Yes.
I'd like to hear about that.
Yeah, so most people, when they're asked to join a board, unless it's a bigger, more prominent organization, often are sitting on their first board. You know, they get it to a certain point in their life. They've been volunteering, or they're known in the community or something, and someone asks them to sit on a board. Most people are sitting on their first board. And most people have never done the type of fundraising we're talking about. They may have invited people to special events, filled a table. They may have done a walkathon and mm-hmm. signed people up. Maybe they did crowdfunding. They had a page, Facebook page, and raised money. But most people have not either been asked one-on-one, face-to-face, or asked. certainly among volunteers, virtually every time I ask that question of a board, less than half the board has either asked or been asked. So not only are they new to boards often, but they're very new to the type of strategic long-term fundraising that really makes the difference, the building relationships with individuals for the long run.
Right, and there are some organizations out there. I had one of the Amy Klein from Princeton talk about, because they have like board classes or, you know, training, which you offer too, don't you? Yes, so you offer that. So let's back up a little bit, because we brought you on to talk about the book and your organization. So talk about how Asking Matters came to be, and then we'll take a quick break and we'll get into the book. So Asking Matters.
So how it came to be is that my last full-time gig was with Hudson Guild, one of the old settlement houses in New York City, where I served as deputy ED and then as ED, executive director.
And what's a settlement house?
A settlement house is a cradle-to-grave community center. They were founded in the late 1800s. Jane Addams is in Hull House.
I've heard of that one.
Is the model. Some people have heard of Henry Street Settlement in New York. That might be the most famous in the city. These organizations sprouted up in poor and immigrant, mostly immigrant communities in many areas of the country. And the idea was to be a good neighbor and help people locally. Everything from English as a second language to sewing class, to taking kids to the dentist for checkups, to providing after-school activities and such. So Hudson Guild has always provided everything from Head Start and daycare and nursery and kindergarten to a senior program, meals and activities for seniors and such, with a lot of teen programs in between. Some have housing and such. So I came to Hudson Guild as a deputy executive director, and we decided we needed to do a capital campaign. Our facilities were all in public housing buildings, which is common in New York City, and those facilities had fallen apart over many decades. The city didn't have the money necessarily to renovate them. We decided we would do it privately. And we hired, all this is to say, we hired Andrea Kilstead, a capital campaign consultant who had been recommended to us, and we worked together for a number of years, knocked it out of the park on our campaign. We raised probably 10 times as much as the Guild had ever raised.
Wow.
Got renovated our flagship facility. It was really gorgeous. Andre and I became friends and peers. And when I left Hudson Guild, we decided to work together, and we thought, how can we help the field the most? Once again, right, how can we help? We looked around and we saw how everyone was struggling to fundraise, how board members were struggling, how they were being asked to do this, what we think is transactional quid pro quo fundraising. I'll invite you to my special event. You invite me to yours. I give you $100. You give me $100. And board members often would say, and they do say when they come to the board, I'll do anything but fundraise. That's such a common line. We thought, well, how can we get board members passed it, and then it expanded to all staff. How can we help people be more comfortable and effective fundraisers so that they're not saying, oh, I'm not a fundraiser, that Brian's a fundraiser, whatever that means, right? I'm not a fundraiser, so that everyone could appreciate what they brought to the table and embrace their inner fundraiser. That's how Asking Matters came about. And the asking styles were a concept Andrea had been noodling with. I think at first they were called temperaments and such. We spent many months figuring out all the names and such, and then hiring someone to create an assessment, a scientifically based assessment that people could take, and it all flowed from there.
Nice. Well, yeah. I'm excited to delve into the book in a minute. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning. You're back. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, and we're on Facebook Live today if you want to check us out and follow along. And before we get talking more with Brian about his book, I want to put a plug in for Princeton Community Works. So if you like what you're hearing today about boards and fundraising, Princeton Community Works is an annual conference in Princeton on the Princeton campus at First Campus Center, and they have over 400 nonprofit volunteers, professionals. They have all kinds of seminars and workshops, and this coming Monday, the 28th of January. It's from 5 to 9, and they give you dinner, and it's only $35. Ooh. So who can't afford that? And it's always great to go to Princeton. So look it up, PrincetonCommunityWorks.org, and sign up, because I think this is my fourth or fifth year going, and it's always a great networking event, and they always have great speakers and great resources. So check that out. All right, now we're back to Brian, and Brian Saber is the president of Asking Matters, which is an online resource for fundraising, nonprofits. I don't know. You tell us the website and what your elevator speech for Asking Matters.
Sure. So Asking Matters is designed to help people become comfortable and effective face-to-face askers. So we have web-based materials, a membership, all sorts of videos you can watch, webinars I do from time to time, and I, representing Asking Matters, am out there in the field going to conferences and doing trainings for boards and staff. So I'm all over the country at this point doing these things. I just came from California, where I did some trainings for Adventist Health Glendale, part of the Adventist Health System.
My mom
out
lives
there.
In Glendale.
Oh, yes. I was up in Ojai, which was really lovely for a day. Beautiful up there. And I'm working with Opera Saratoga, a great opera company upstate New York, and the YMCAs and the Boys and Girls Clubs of America, nice. The U.S. Olympic Committee. So I take the show on the road doing all sorts of trainings and keynotes and things, and then we have the web-based material for people all around the country to plug in and learn about their asking style.
And you can find out what your asking style is by reading Brian's book called Asking Styles, Revolutionize Your Fundraising. And it came out earlier this year, or yeah. No, 2018, right? 2018?
Yes, in July.
Yes.
So July, yeah.
Tell us about, well, first of all, maybe I should say, there's an online test you can take. It takes like 3 minutes.
Yes. At askingmatters.com, just click on Find Your Asking Style. It's all true, false questions.
Yeah, so I think I came up as a kindred spirit, secondary go-getter, but I thought I'd be the opposite, so I don't know. But why don't we start with the four asking styles and what that means?
Sure. So the asking styles are based on two personality traits. One, how you interact with people. Are you extroverted or introverted? And the second, how do you think? Are you analytic or intuitive? So what's so fascinating, especially about the extrovert-introvert side, is people think if you're extroverted, you're this in your face, you know, so big and bubbly, and Nicole's pointing to herself, as you can see if you're on Facebook Live. But actually, a real, a caricature almost, like if you're old, like I am, John Candy from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, or if you're younger, Michael Scott from The Office, you know. Mm. So, and if you're an introvert, it means you're I hermetically sealed, like you don't go out or do anything. And it's really not about that. It's about where you derive your energy, and it has to do with whether you think to talk or talk to think. So extroverts think and talk at the same time. They're very comfortable processing and speaking about at the same time, whereas introverts stop and think and then talk. So the rhythm of the conversation is a little different. And introverts, without realizing it, when they're in a conversation, even like we are here, speed up their thought process to be in the conversation. Because if introverts stop and think, the extroverts are going to keep talking to fill the space, especially if you're in a group, you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So we speed up, and I say we because I'm a classic introvert, I'm a kindred spirit, and that takes a lot of energy. So I always say at the end of a training at a conference, you can tell who the extroverts are versus the introverts, because the extroverts say, oh, okay, everyone, let's go to the bar and have a drink. And the introverts say, I'm going to my hotel room to chill and refuel, or they find one person to go have a quiet dinner with. And participants at all of these events always joke with me, and they say, come on, Brian, come to the bar. And I say, I'm not going to the bar. So you've got introversion, extroversion, and then is the analytic intuitive. So do you start with data and then figure out the idea based on the data, or do you have some gut, which is you, because you're intuitive, do you have a gut, and then you see if the data supports it. So you throw out an idea, you throw stuff against the wall, you see if it sticks, which is the opposite of the analytic, who first figures out the data behind and then comes up with the idea. So based on those two personality traits, you fall into one of four categories, styles: rainmaker, go-getter, kindred spirit, mission controller. And the first thing I would say to people is no one sits cleanly in one box or another. Some people are uber this or uber that, and they're, you know, towards the end of a spectrum. Most of us are somewhere in between. We all have a little bit of all these traits. I always say it's not like the go-getter can't be caring and the kindred spirit can't be strategic or goal-oriented. We all have a bit of that, but where's the balance, right, of our personality? And in fact, when you take the assessment, the result you get has a primary and a secondary, as you noted. So it gives you an idea of which of your traits is predominating. And so it's a little bit nuanced. And at the end of the day, it's a guide, hopefully helping you maybe to see yourself in a new light or just appreciate yourself for what you are, and then to go forward confidently saying, this is who I am. And it's actually, I will say that for more than 20 years as a fundraiser, I was insecure. I was very successful according to all of my employers, all the boards and CEOs, if I was the second in command or something. Everyone was pleased with my results, but I kept thinking, yeah, but I'm not that person. I don't like special events. I don't like meeting new people. I don't, there are all these things. And it took developing the asking self for me myself as a successful fundraiser to feel good and realize, you know what? No one has it all. I've played to my strengths, and that's all anyone can do. So that's what the asking styles are about. So you've got your rainmaker, the analytic extrovert, who is very objective and strategic and driven, keeps his or her eye on the prize, very goal-oriented. You've got the go-getter, who's also looking in the future, but in a more general way about what's possible. Very visionary, brings lots of creativity and excitement and energy, makes friends easily. That's the intuitive extrovert, top right. Then you've got kindred spirit, bottom right. That's the intuitive introvert, very feelings-oriented. Everything comes from the heart. All of our decisions are very personal, and we treat people in a very caring and attentive way because that's important to us as well. And the mission controller, your analytic introvert, who's the Eagle Scout, the one who always gets the job done, systematic, methodical, keeps their eye on the prize, and is a great observer and listener. Likes to sit back and see how things are going. So those are the styles, and that's how we see. That's the lens through which we look at fundraising at Asking Matters.
So basically, you just figure out who you are and own it, right?
Yes, just own it. I am a kindred spirit. You are a go-getter. Absolutely. Yes.
Well, the thing that struck me about this book too is I grew up. My parents were counselors and advisors using the DISC personal profile system.
Yes.
So there's so many versions of that out there, but the yes. DISC, if people aren't familiar with it, I've seen it a lot lately at conferences because it's kind of how do you build teams and how do you work well together? Because the other thing about that is you realize who you are and what your strengths are and how you analyze or how you approach. But on the flip side is what's your, you know, who are you pitching to and how does that play into the equation, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we do a lot of work at Asking Matters on that. For instance, what if you and an asking partner are going to see a donor? Well, what if you're both extroverts and your donor is an introvert? What if, right, you have to make sure not to monopolize the conversation. What if you're both intuitives and your donor is an analytic? And I use this example a lot because, as you know from the book, I have a long history in Chicago. I've worked with one fabulous organization, their Northwestern Settlement House, which is a settlement like Hudson Guild in New York. And my buddy there, Ron, has been the CEO the entire time since the early 90s when I started working there. He and I have gone through three campaigns. We've been in endless meetings together. We think over 1,000 meetings with donors. He is a go-getter, like you are, Nicole, and I'm the kindred spirit. So I'm glad to have the extrovert, and Ron often starts the meeting because he's more comfortable in those first moments, but we're both intuitives. So in 30 years, more or less, we have not led with the analytic. And people say, well, what happens if your donor's analytic? Well, we keep that in mind. And it's not that we don't bring the material, and it's not that we can't share that and won't share it. But at the end of the day, we stay true to who we are because that's where the passion and the authenticity are, to come back to what we said at the very beginning here. So, yes, and then it also teaches you, let's say, in terms of board dynamics, right? And as a matter of fact, I'm about to write my second book.
Really?
I am. It's going to be Asking Styles and Boards.
Oh, great.
And all about the board dynamic based on styles, how board members might play different roles or come to those different roles. I mean, imagine a board chair. Anyone can be a board chair. What does it mean if the board chair is a rainmaker, go-getter, a kindred spirit, or a mission controller? How might that impact how that person leads the board? And how do you train people of different styles? I hate role plays. As an introvert, I don't like being – it will surprise you. Here I am on a radio station. I wrote a book, but I don't like being the center of attention. So I don't want to do a role play where everyone's watching me. That makes me nervous. I want to practice one-on-one. So how do you train boards when people are of different styles and have different needs and things like that?
Well, that's a great surprise that you have another book coming out. Congrats.
Thank you. Start writing it in 2 weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I'm excited.
The crunch is on.
It is.
That's good. Well, something that struck me is I wanted to ask you about the whole quid pro quo thing because it drives me insane.
That's awful.
So how can people get out of that? And also, are we getting away from the galas and the golf outings, or is that going to be here? I think they're lucrative and people enjoy them. I don't know. I'd love your opinion. On the quid pro quo and all the gala frenzy.
Yes, well, you've certainly hit on a sensitive spot for me where I have a lot to say. And I don't think it's just because I myself don't like special events because I'm an introvert. Here's the thing. So let's first talk about special events. There is a role for special events in fundraising. And there are some events that make tons of money and are very lucrative. But here are the things we all know about fundraising events. One, they are much more expensive to put on than anyone ever calculates because most people don't include the staff time that's not being used elsewhere. Two, most people do not make their biggest gift to a fundraiser. Even someone who buys a $25,000 table, I guarantee you, is making bigger gifts elsewhere. And most people are giving much less than they could because you have to set the ticket level at a level a lot of people can afford. Mm-hmm. The basic ticket often doesn't have a lot of profit in it. You're hoping people will buy a silent auction item and such. Three, and this gets to the quid pro quo. A lot of our special events, especially the galas and the golf outings and such, are dependent on our board members coming through and bringing people in. So there are a couple of challenges here. One is that let's say a board member buys a table and brings a whole bunch of people to it. Chances are those people aren't interested in your cause. They're there, they're going to have a social time at the table, and maybe someone will get interested, maybe not. In the meantime, your board member has now spent a good deal of his or her money on that table Whereas that board member would have given you that money outright. If anyone believes in the organization enough to just give a general operating gift, it's a board member. And here you've diverted the board member's funding to the event. And often these events succeed on the backs of board members. And I always say, if you're going to calculate truly the net profit, you not only have to take out all the direct costs and all the indirect costs and the staff costs, but you have to take out all the board gifts, or most of them. And if you do that, you'd be shocked at how little money you're often left with. Now, to the point of the quid pro quo, the killer is, so let's take letter writing. Or it's the same with tickets, too. So you ask some of your friends to each spend $150 on a ticket or give an end-of-year contribution, and they all ask you. And here's what happens. So first of all, you as a board member say to the staff, okay, I got all these gifts, but don't bother my friends. Please don't write to them. So they never get involved. They don't get cultivated. In the meantime, the staff of your organization has to write thank you notes and keep track of them internally and all this stuff. And when you leave the board of your organization, which will happen eventually, right? Could be 10 years, but you'll leave. All of your gifts will leave with you because the relationship is only to you. It's not to the organization. So it creates this vicious cycle where whoever then replaces you on the board of your beloved organization is only now has to replace your gifts as opposed to adding to it. And I would rather board members get away from all that and start spending their money at their organization. Mm-hmm. If everyone one day could say, okay, uncle, I'm not going to ask you. You don't ask me. I'm going to take the $1,000 I was spreading among my friends and I'm going to give it to my organization where I care passionately. You give your $1,000 to yours. Mm-hmm. Now my organization doesn't have to bother with you since you're never going to like my organization. We don't have to send you thank you notes. And you as my board member have more of an investment here because you've now given more where your heart is. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the most passionate points for me in fundraising. And I think it's so important if we're going to get our board members to be enthusiastic about fundraising and about their own organization, right? So that's where I come down there. I wish we could get rid of all quid pro quo fundraising today.
Exactly. I'm with you 100%. And it's crazy. Even the kids, like, we get stuff in the elementary school. Email your grandma. Email all your aunt. I'm like, no, we're not doing that.
It's funny that you say that because just last week, 2 weeks ago, I wrote a blog post. I don't know if you've seen it yet, which says bad fundraising starts early.
Yeah, I think I did read it.
And I got some very interesting comments and blowback on it, and which was interesting. But a lot of the fundraising we ask our kids to do is terrible. My friend's kids ask, hit me up. Mm-hmm. I don't care about their stuff. Now, I understand if kids can't afford to play on their baseball team and get uniforms and so forth, I want to help, regardless of who that is. But my friend can afford to buy her son a baseball uniform or whatever it is, and yet I'm doing it, and then I'm supposed to have my son, I guess, ask her. Mm. And that's, and we're doing so much of that in our schools and with our kids. And that's, I don't think it's teaching fundraising the right way from an early age.
Yeah, and I think now, today, people can't go door to door because of safety and stranger danger and all that stuff. Because I went soliciting for the Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethon with my friend around the neighborhood, and we sold chocolate bars for something in our school. Yes. I don't remember what. But, I mean, in those times, you were really building skills. You were knocking on doors. You were talking to people. But that's not how it's done today. You know, it's totally social media and strong arming and pressure, and it's crazy. So if you can transform that, that would be wonderful. So hopefully you can help do that. What else did I want to ask about? So many things keep popping up. Well, it's an exciting time in the nonprofit world, I think, right? Don't you think there's a transition afoot? Would you say or no?
Well,
corporate social responsibility and people wanting to be engaged and people wanting to be involved and caring. I mean, I know they say the millennials just love to like things, but I don't know. I mean, well.
So it's interesting. I think there's a lot of change because of technology and social media and such. At the end of the day, though, Most of the money comes from individuals, and most of the big all the big gifts come from asking, from building relationships and asking in person. That has not changed. Okay. And no matter what happens, I think, and maybe I can't think far enough into the future, but I still think as long as we are human beings, genetically we're human and living things, we're not avatars or robots, we are going to want to interact with each other, and we're going to care where we have a relationship. That has not changed, and as a matter of fact, I would say that's become even more important because we're all getting very isolated, sitting with our electronics, talking to people around the world, building the – and I'm not saying these relationships can't be real and can't be deep, but I think many of us are starved for the real in-person relationships, which makes the type of fundraising I'm talking about even more important and valuable. So, yes, the world is changing in many ways, but human beings still, we're animals. We interact with each other in a certain way. That's core to who we are.
Right. Well, I coined a phrase this week. I don't know if I am the only one that coined it, but my new saying, my new mantra for 2019 is philanthropy is the new community. Because people aren't going to church, people aren't in their neighborhoods, they're interacting online but not in person. So if you find a volunteer opportunity or a cause you can get behind where you can go to meetings and go to events or go to soup kitchens or whatever, that's where you're actually interacting with humans, and more importantly, interacting with humans that or people that are different from you, whether it's the clients you're serving or the intergenerational communication at the nonprofit, whether you've got an older person that's on the board and then a younger person who's the web designer that's helping or so it's interaction from all kinds of avenues. So that's my new mantra, and I'm sticking to it.
I like it. Philanthropy is the new community. That's great.
So I know, maybe I'll write a book on that. So you've got me excited to write a book now, maybe. I don't know.
It's fun.
I know. Well, it's not as easy as it sounds, though.
No. It is not easy, but and it's not for everyone for sure, but I really enjoyed the process, I have to say.
So, well, obviously, if you're jumping right back in, that's great. All right. What else can we talk about? Is there anything else from the book?
I see we're getting some comments.
Oh, okay.
Can you see those? Because I'm not seeing them on my screen, but I can see behind over your shoulder.
Oh, okay.
And then I don't know if anyone has a question they want to ask.
Yeah, ask a question. And you want to give away a couple books, right?
Yes.
So
I'm happy to give away a couple
books.
Did we
give away the question already or the answer or no?
Well, you said, not necessarily.
Okay, so give your question out.
Okay, so here. So last year now it's the year before because we're in 2019. But in 2017... $410 billion was given in charitable gifts in the United States. And the question is, what percentage of that came from individuals? And the two people who get closest to that, of those who are listening, watching
Amy,
on Facebook.
Amy, I don't know if you qualify.
Right now,
Amy knows.
I'm
sure Amy knows.
And I know how many people we have. But each of you will give away two books, and we'll send those off to whoever gets that closest.
Okay.
Yes.
So anybody who wants to comment that's watching, if you can guess how much of fundraising comes from, what'd you say, personal?
From individuals.
Individuals.
Much comes from individuals.
Yeah, so it's a shocking. So
yeah, and I see some top this whoever
top
this
nonprofits.
Is, the top
they're
nonprofits
great, yeah.
Does have a question, and it's true. Boards. We need to do a much better job of educating our boards as to where the money comes from, because they think they're helping by saying, okay, let's put on another event. Oh, you do more foundation work. I just got this comment the other day. Well, we should be doing this and that. And I said, no, when you look at the amount of time organizations invest in special events and in institutional fundraising, corporations and foundations, and even government support, relative to where the money is, we're not being strategic. We're not we're not getting the best bang for the buck because special events have a diminishing return. They're expensive and time-consuming. Only a small percentage of all philanthropic dollars come from corporations and foundations.
Well, I've got a good story. So my one friend was telling me it was a very private exclusive school, and they did a capital campaign, mm-hmm. and they were all excited because they raised $8 million. And they went forward with their projects and the upgrades and this and that. And then the numbers came in, and it took them $6 million to raise that $8 million.
Ooh, wow.
And so, yeah, which is egregious, right?
Yeah.
No, it is a real thing. Yeah, crazy,
wow.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So when people just don't realize. They're like, oh, look at all this money coming in. And then you're like, well, wait a minute.
Yes. But interestingly, and so Eddie Thompson, Thompson Associates is a very big estate planning firm nationally. He was at this conference I was at last week in California, and he showed the statistics for the return on investment for a special events dollar, an annual fund dollar, a major gift dollar, and a plan giving dollar. And that's the order in which they're effective. So plan giving is an incredibly effective way to raise money for the future that most organizations are missing out on. Next to that, major gifts, less helpful annual, and the most expensive dollars are the special events dollars, and by wide margins.
Right.
Really compelling statistic, which I'm going to be talking about more over time, because when you look at that, you can't argue it. And I think we do need to teach our boards much more about where the money comes from and help them be strategic thinkers alongside us as staff.
Right, and that's what has been the compelling thing for me volunteering with Room to Read, because it was started by a Microsoft executive, but they were smart with business and go big and go home. But the main message that they've shared with the volunteers, it's cheap and cheerful. That's what. As a volunteer, we get zero budget, zero money. We're just, but we're love working with the organization and advocating for the organization. And so what I do is I approach it like I did when I was in sales. I just throw stuff at the wall and attend things and meet people and see what sticks, because the numbers game will be in my favor. Eventually, if I talk to enough people, I'll get a few. Maybe you can help me. But I'll get a few that will say, oh, literacy, global literacy, that resonates with me. I want to join your cause. I want to help you. I want to give. And I've just had a blast doing it because I'm the extrovert. I can go to all these events.
Yes, and we need you, right? We need you. And that's true. You want the people who will gleefully and excitedly come on to your cause, not the people you arm twist because of your relationship, because you have to constantly arm twist them. And it's really tiresome and it's frustrating, and it can step on the relationships, which a lot of people don't want. Now, as a go-getter, and Andrea, my co-founder, is a go-getter, I love my motto is, I love go-getters until they drive me crazy. I love the energy, and I love the all for one, one for all. You spread the net wide, you spread your enthusiasm wide, and you bring a lot of people along, and I love that. You're great at doing that. So that's a skill.
I feel like there's a butt coming.
Yeah, the butt is like, at some point it's like, can I just focus you? Can we stay on message for a minute? Can we stick with what we're doing? That would be my butt. It's like, okay, enough with the ideas. We've got to make one of these happen. Or and go-getters, as you know from the book, can talk too much in meetings. So as we said before the show, and such, the goal always is to ask a lot of questions and hear from the other person, and you want that with your donors and go-getters and rainmakers, but go-getters the most can talk too much. My buddy Ron in Chicago will be the first to admit that he goes long. I think he says so in the book, in fact, and it's up to me to say, okay, Ron, we've heard enough. We have to let's talk to the donors.
Yes.
Because he's so passionate about what he's doing, like you are, and so it's funny because in my role here, you're asking me questions and I'm spending a lot of time talking, but in my role as a fundraiser, it would be just the opposite, where I'd ask a brief question like you're asking and let the donor give a big answer.
Yep. So I can do both. See?
See? Look at that.
I know. I've learned something already. Oh my gosh. So much fun. All right. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be back.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, RabCoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody out there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterton-chamber.org. The Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And we're back. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterton Chamber Radio. And today we are talking with fundraiser extraordinaire Brian Saver, who's the president of Asking Matters. So it's askingmatters.com. And he wrote a new book called Asking Styles, Revolutionize Your Fundraising. And he's given us all kinds of great information about fundraising because fundraising is tough for board members, for anyone. And I've learned so much today. We haven't had too many people throw in an answer to our question. So should we just tell people what it is, what the answer is? Okay.
Yes.
Say the question again.
Okay.
And then.
So $410 billion was given in charitable gifts in 2017. We won't have the 2018 numbers from Giving USA till the spring. And the question was, what percentage comes from individuals? So in 2017, 70% was outright gifts from individuals.
That's a lot.
9% was bequests. Those planned gifts we were talking about, those are all individuals. Only individuals can make a planned gift. And half of all foundation money is actually individual and small family foundation money, where truly it's an individual giving their money. They've just parked it in some vehicle for tax purposes, for posterity, because of family dynamics. So when you put that together, 87% of all charitable gifts came from individuals in 2017. And we know the largest gifts come from asking in person. The gifts that are at the top of your donor list, the gifts that are on rooms and buildings, even the big sponsors for a special event, those gifts are almost always asked for in person and by building a relationship, even if it's with the business and the person who represents the business. So you got to get out there and cultivate and solicit individuals and build those relationships.
That's an incredible statistic. I think people don't realize that at all. So.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, so if people want to get your book, it's probably available on your website or Amazon. How do people get your book?
Yes. So it is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Okay. It's available in paperback and as an e-reader.
Oh.
So either format, I don't sell it on my site.
I wasn't sure. Okay.
And actually some bookstores carry it, like my local bookstore. It's great. There are still local bookstores. So back where I live in South Orange and Maplewood, New Jersey, you can go into Words Bookstore. I'm going to make a pitch for it because we love local bookstores. But most people, of course, are buying it on Amazon. I think retail, I say it's $29.95, but Amazon sells it for $24.95. So that's the price most people sell it for. And it will revolutionize your fundraising. You will walk away after having read this book, without doubt, feeling more comfortable and more empowered. You'll understand who you are in the process. And you'll learn so much. There's a chapter on how to use the styles as a team, how to use them with your board, how to recognize in your donors their asking style, which you alluded to earlier, so that you understand better how to work with them. And I just think it's I've seen so many people have these aha moments once they learn their asking style. I think all these personality assessments are really great. The beauty of this one is it's meant for fundraisers. It's through the eyes of fundraising. So it really helps you situate yourself in the nonprofit world and embrace all the great strengths you have.
So. I love it. Yeah. I learned so much, and it puts things in perspective. And like you said, you can own your strengths and be more confident about who you are as a person, as a fundraiser, and what your goals are. So that's incredible. Well, tell us more about Asking Matters and how people can sign up if they become a member, what kind of tools are available to them, and how does that structure work?
Sure. Thank you. So I only open membership a couple of times a year. So that in between I can be focusing on my members and not always trying to sell a membership.
Like a politician.
Yeah, exactly right. So I think it's the beginning of March, the first week in March, that membership will be open. It's the greatest bargain in the world. I have to say it's $29 a month. You don't have to stay for a set number of months. There is no fee to stop. The day you stop, we stop billing you. I have this incredible module system the first year. There are 6 modules. First, understanding yourself, preparing to ask, asking, building a team. Every week I send material out to you. Many weeks it's a video training, slides with a voiceover, worksheets, tons of sample materials. I have office hours twice a month for members. It's a half-hour webinar. Once a month it's a topic I teach that's not taught through the modules, or I go into depth, and once a month it's member questions. So I just did it yesterday. We had questions about metrics for how to figure out if you're doing well as a major gift officer. One question was about I'll remember what those other questions were. But questions like how to set up meetings, or what do I do if I run into challenges with meetings? How do I start if I'm new in my position? How do I so forth and so on. So there's that. I do webinars on each asking style. As a matter of fact, those are coming up in 2 weeks, and members get those free. So it's an in-depth webinar on whatever. So anyone who's listening, if you take the assessment and you're intrigued, you actually in 2 weeks could take a webinar that I will lead live on how to fundraise every step of the way using your style. I also want some what else do I do for members? They get discounts on other things. It's a wonderful deal. So that's the membership. You can a la carte, as I said, buy the Asking Styles webinars and things like that. And then the rest of the time I'm on the road. So if you have a board that you're trying to get to fundraise and you want to have a retreat or a half-day training, I can do that. And I come and speak to association meetings. I'm going out for ALS, the ALS Foundation in Arizona in a couple of weeks. And to AFP chapters, you're probably familiar with the Association of Fundraising Professionals. I do a lot of their philanthropy days and things like that. So that's Asking Matters and me.
That's a wealth of information. I do want to ask you, because I know it's frustrating, you talk about the importance of one-on-one interaction. But what about people don't answer their phone? They can see your call coming. They don't pick up the phone. So how do you access someone if you can't, you know, if you can't reach them? Do you, like, accost them at the coffee shop?
Well, you know, I think sometimes we try to cast the net a little too wide. And this building a relationship should be with people who can give at a certain level. You need to set a threshold, and you need to get to know them over time, and you need to deal with the hand raisers as opposed to just knocking your head against the wall trying to get through. So that's the first point. The second is, it's funny that you talk about calling because you're a go-getter. So of course you're going to pick up the phone and call. And I, as a kindred spirit, will do anything but pick up the phone and call because I don't like the phone. I'm an introvert. So first of all, I email, and I send these beautifully crafted emails, personal letters, which often get someone's attention. I like email because I get to put my whole case, if you will, for meeting out there. If I pick up the phone or someone picks up the phone and they're rushed or whatever, it throws me. I'm not as comfortable in that moment, and it's harder for me to then convince them. You're right. People are watching their phones, and they have caller ID. And sometimes your phone number isn't going to be in there, so they won't pick it up because they don't know you, or they won't pick it up because they do know you. And that happens. What we're trying to do is get the people who are passionate and really care to continue to build and deepen their relationship. So you do need to have a thick skin in our business, which is not easy for me. But you also need to go where the passion is and build those relationships. I don't think we spend enough time with our best donors, and we'd be better off spending more time with them than trying to cast the net too wide, because that's where you're going to face the most resistance.
Right. And I would just, but my perspective is trying to get in the door, right?
Yes.
I mean, you've got a relationship, right. But also emails. People get millions of emails and they just delete them. So you must have a knack for getting that subject line. Right.
So, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we learned so much today, and it's been so much fun. And I think, we'll say it again, it's Brian Saber, who is the president of Asking Matters. So askingmatters.com. The book is called Asking Styles. And you can figure out what your style is by taking a quick survey on his website and looking at his blog and all the offerings you have. So we're very thankful for all that you shared with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Tune in every Monday morning at 10 a.m. on 100 in Chamber Radio for Chamber in Action with Chamber President Chris Phelan and Good Morning host Big C, where we'll keep you informed on all the issues, all the initiatives of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce and our business community here in Hunterdon County.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
When it comes to President Trump delivering a State of the Union address, his spokeswoman says,
"We always like to have a plan B."
And that's what Sarah Sanders says the White House is working on after Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi asks President Trump to delay the address over security concerns related to the government shutdown.
Well, whether he does that from the halls of Congress or whether he does that in another location, the president will talk to the American people on January 29th.
Nine U.S. service members are injured, two of them critically, after two military vehicles crash in southern New Mexico last night, not far from Holloman Air Force Base. Teachers in Los Angeles returning to the classrooms today after ending a strike that had lasted more than a week. Now teachers in Denver have overwhelmingly approved a strike that could start on Monday. This is USA Radio News.
This is a national health alert from the healthcare hotline. Are you on Medicare and or have private insurance and suffer from back pain? MD Topical has a solution for you. Today, you can qualify to receive a pain-relieving treatment, such as a comfortable back brace or a customized pain treatment, at little or no cost. Call MD Topical toll-free now, 877-875-5909. It just takes a couple of minutes to qualify for these amazing treatments that have helped thousands of people with severe pain. Your personalized pain treatment will be delivered directly to your door. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com and get started on your road to a pain-free life. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com.
A high school student at the center of a controversial incident at last week's March for Life says,
"In hindsight, I wish we could have walked away and avoided the whole thing, but I can't say that I'm sorry."
An initial video goes viral showing the junior, Nicholas Sandman of Covington Catholic High School in Kentucky, appearing to, in some people's estimations, smirk in the face of Nathan Phillips, a tribal elder who was drumming outside the Lincoln Memorial. The teenager denies he was smirking.
"I have the utmost respect for Mr. Phillips. It's another person that freely uses First Amendment right."
He spoke on NBC's Today Show. The mayor of South Bend, Indiana, wants to run for president. Mayor Pete Buttigieg making the announcement in a video saying it's a season for boldness and a time to focus on the future. Newark Liberty Airport in New Jersey back to normal after a drone scare last night. Two drones were seen in the vicinity, grounding flights for 90 minutes. And this is USA Radio News.
If your New Year's resolution is to be healthier, it all starts with a good night's rest. MyPillow's best offer ever has been extended. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the end of the year special, you'll get the lowest price ever MyPillow has offered for their four-pack, free shipping, and their 60-day money-back guarantee has been extended through March 1st. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the end of the year special, use my promo code USA to get two premium MyPillows and two go-anywhere pillows.